welcome back to Cinema Vino. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Hey.
Here with Travis Budd, Sean Jordan.
That's me.
My name is Todd Wofford.
That's you.
And yeah, we're drinking a little Fabulist Merlot because it has a snake on the label. And we are going to talk about Escape from L.A.
Call me Snake.
With Snake Plissken. Kurt Russell's iconic role. And to my knowledge, the only sequel that he did.
Is this...
And I mean, yeah. He was probably in some of those goddamn Fast and Furious movies, but I like to put those out in my brain.
He's in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
That's true.
Which is a sequel.
So forget what I just said. He's done quite a few sequels.
But he's not in the first one, yeah, so it's not like him reprising a role.
Because it was like, has Kevin Costner ever done a sequel? I was thinking about that when he was walking out in the Field of Dreams thing.
Well, that was kind of a sequel in itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like a full-blown movie sequel, has he ever done one? I don't think he has. So, yeah, just food for thought.
Food for thought.
Just throwing that out there into the world.
Well.
Waterworld 2. Any day now.
I want to see Postman 2.
Yeah.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Wyatt Earp 2, Return to the OK Corral. So, we're going to talk about Escape from L.A. This was Sean's pick.
Yes, it was.
A little bit of background about this movie. It was released August 9th, 1996. It is the sequel to Escape from New York. Woo! Both films were directed by John Carpenter. Escape from New York came out in 1981, I believe.
87?
Somewhere.
It was about 10 years apart.
We'll put Trav as our fact checker on this because I believe at the beginning of...
Fact checker. I'm not that fat.
So I believe that New York came out in 81 and because they said 16 years later at the beginning of L.A., so that would make sense if it
You're
was...
You're right. It was 81.
81, yeah.
Yep.
So I remember the look of it. It's like, yeah, this seems like an early 80s type deal. New York was a cult classic. Great cast of people. Good like character Hold actors.
Up. For the record, Escape from New York was set in 1997, the year 1997. Mm-hmm. And then Escape from L.A. came out in 1996.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's like it was meant to be.
I don't know why.
So yeah, Kurt Russell plays Snake Plissken. This is a trashy... post-apocalyptic future. And in my review, I wonder, like, in my written review of, like, what is post-apocalyptic? I think it's a future where nobody bathes. I think that's the definition of it. It's like where everybody is fragrant.
Well, there was no water.
Yeah.
I mean, they were surrounded by an ocean, but
yeah,
they didn't have, like, running water. So, yeah, they definitely smelled.
Yeah. So, post-apocalyptic is stinky.
But here's the thing. We spend most of the time in the apocalyptic area. However, across from that is supposed to be kind of a religious utopia or whatever they've made it.
It's a religious autocracy.
Yeah, they've taken any person.
Good word use. I like
any person that is not like Pleasantville. Any person that's not pleasant, they've taken and put on this island, and
cleansed.
Yeah,
yeah.
From which you would think that as that list got bigger, they would not be able to fit as many people in L.A.
Yeah. It would be overflowing with people.
Yeah, so, I mean, even...
They did give them the choice to just, take the electric chair.
96.
Yeah, there's way more assholes in the U.S. of A.
There's too many
that should be put over there. And then in this new regime or whatever, all the assholes in America are going to sink whatever's left of L.A.
I mean, there's more assholes on the expressway right now than you could probably fit in...
You can fit a lot of people on the 405.
I'm looking at two right now.
That's a true statement. So Plissken is like this badass, like ex-soldier, enforcer.
Yeah, they don't really tell you what his background is other than he gets shit done.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that in both movies, where this one, it's like all this stuff that happened in Cleveland that they never really elaborate on.
Do they mention Cleveland and Escape from New York?
No, I think Cleveland happens between New York and L.A.
Oh.
It's like the
yada, 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 yeah.
Yeah. And so, basically in this storyline, L.A. has become like this gulag, this massive, like, penal colony where...
penal.
where people who are not morally acceptable get shipped off to this prison that is L.A. And they get walled off while the moral America, like, goes on to live their lives. And so at the beginning of the movie, Plissken's been captured and is being shipped off to L.A. So, and that kind of, it's a burned out, like, kind of hellscape. It's just this grungy, nasty, basically, like, it looks like the L.A. that would have happened, like the Chernobyl L.A., where it's like everything's grown up and nasty and, like,
everything's sort of on fire. There was like a category like 9.5 earthquake that basically like separated the city of LA from the continental United States and put a bunch of water in between the city. And so instead of like, you know, doing anything about it, the president was just like, all right, you're going to be our new Australia. You know, we're just going to send all of our bad people there.
Yeah.
And the list of what makes someone a bad person is just determined by me, the president, who's changed the Constitution to make me the president forever. Mm-hmm. He pulled the I am the Senate move.
Yeah. Yeah.
Played by Cliff Robertson, mm-hmm. who was our first Uncle Ben in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Was a good Uncle Ben.
Yeah, he was a good Uncle Ben.
And, you know, a great Rice as well. So, so basically this movie kind of happens in the mid-90s where you had that kind of moral whatever like thing, like the moral majority in Congress and like the government, like it was a big thing of like, we're going to return to,
it was the Clinton era.
And yeah, it was like the Newt Gingrich, like that was the rebellion against the Clinton era, Bob Dole. It was like, we're going to take America back to what it used to be. And like, we're going to get rid of all this like violence. There was
the Satanic Panic. You had, you know, the rebellion against rap music. You had the morality of like Tipper Gore. Mm-hmm. You know, this was when I think Hillary Clinton championed like censoring music in Walmart, and like you could buy curse words in Walmart. Mm-hmm. You just, that's not right. That was Hillary Clinton.
For my birthday one year, I got like a Puff Daddy CD. With what, no explicit words. And I was like, what is this? What drivel is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I'll use this as a coaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember what album I got. I was like really excited for it. And it was just like, all the words were just like bleeped out. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why does my music just have a whole bunch of stuff like cut out? I want to hear the words. I want to hear the shit words.
My iambic pentameter.
Yeah. Let me hear the fuck words.
Yeah. It's like, if I'm gonna listen to Cisco, he better be just full of profanity. So I found the movie, it was kind of had a lot of cheesy one-liners by design and a lot of D-grade CGI effects.
Uh-huh. It was awesomely 90s.
Yes.
Yeah. Which the director, John Carpenter, has a rogues gallery of some D-grade effects in his movies. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the best ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What was it like? Snake being thrown through the air onto something. I remember that one where it was like, just looked obviously CGI'd cut, like Microsoft Paint. it was clunky.
This was
Carpenter, right?
John Carpenter, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was a big passion project of his.
This mm-hmm. is homeboy that did The Thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Who had all sorts of practical effects, and we've covered that film, and it still stands up today. I mean, you can go back and look at mm-hmm. the practical effects that they used. And there's 100%, I no doubt in my mind that has influenced Guillermo del Toro to want to like keep doing practical effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you think about when The Thing happened versus when Escape from LA came out,
yes.
there was a big tonal shift in what it takes to produce movies. And we were talking about it earlier, we were talking about Tron, how in 1982, there was this whole revolutionization of how you make movies with non-practical effects, with computer, you know, CGI. And I think 15 years after the fact, when Escape from LA is happening, it's like, okay, if I'm making a movie on a budget, I'm not going to throw a Snake Plissken into the air. I'm just going to like put him on a green screen. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care if it's going to look bad in 25 years when some dudes podcasting are going to review it.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm just pointing out that like, The Thing belongs in a museum, and it's so great, and it pioneered so many things, and the effects are so great. And now that we've become so used to CGI, when we see certain levels of it, we're just like, well, this is like watching an old plane trying to get off the ground. This is, yeah, this Lewis and Clark. Shit.
Hey, that's two they're, very different
Wright
stories.
There we go.
Okay mixing and matching in those though.
Sorry. Lewis and Clark and the Wright brothers.
Lois Lane has dysentery.
I got there. Guys, I nailed
two it. Two out of the three groups have a flying person.
I totally stuck the landing.
You know the Oregon Trail Jimmy Olsen's getting eaten.
Somebody's getting dysentery. Honestly, right now it's probably me.
Old Perry White's not going to make it.
Caesar's ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Digressing. Yeah, this was an interesting movie. I don't know. Like I said, I saw it like originally, I think on VHS. I rented it when it came out, and I haven't seen it since then. And so I don't know how, I can't remember my thoughts of it then, but I don't know how it holds up. But what do you guys think compared to your first impression? Sean, you're a big fan.
I love this movie, but I love it for its cheesiness and its campiness. I think it's right up there for Kurt Russell with, you know, Big Trouble in Little China, Escape from New York, obviously. I think his work in this kind of era was just so fun. It's stupid and fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, so this, like I said, this was a big passion project for John Carpenter and Kurt Russell. So this was in, I think, production hell for like 10 years.
Yeah.
We talk about this a lot with some of the other sequels that we've been looking at. You get stuck in production hell, and it's like a lot of times the movie just doesn't come out. And I think this went through so many different revisions. Kurt Russell actually helped write the ending of this movie. Mm-hmm. If not, he like wrote the ending of this movie outright. So yeah, he had a lot of input on the script.
I think he gets credit.
Yeah, he has a writer's credit.
Yeah.
And is this better than Escape from New York? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
But I think it's different.
Yeah.
I think you can't look at them in the same lens because they came out like 15, 17, 16 years apart.
Different generation.
If you were grading them, which one would you say?
I personally like Escape from LA better.
Okay.
Just because it's a different era, you know, it doesn't take itself seriously. He plays fucking basketball to get out of like a jam. Yeah.
And he's like sweaty and coughing. And
good old Taylor couldn't be here with us tonight, but we were talking about how this was awesomely 90s. And I was like, hey, and the meme was Steve Buscemi, who's in this, who was like, hey, what's up, fellow teens? The whole thing, it felt like it to me is like, all right, what's Snake Plissken really good at? Basketball and surfing. What are the kids doing these days? Let's do it. Dope. Hang 10, good buddy.
Let's
wax that board.
Part of me really thinks that this is just like super self-aware. Like they knew exactly what they were doing. And, you know, at the beginning of the movie, and my favorite bit in this movie, and I don't even know if it's a bit or if it's just like something they wrote. In the beginning, they keep calling him Snake, and he just goes, call me Plissken. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the movie, after everything's done and everybody's saved, he's like, hey, Plissken. He's like, call me Snake.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the idea that he's like, fuck you. I don't care what you say. I'm going to like, you know, put you.
Yeah.
It's just, he's so campy. He has an eye patch, which is like classic badass guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he has like an all black like thing with like a black trench coat. And this was prior to like The Matrix where that was, you know, fashionized. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows who Snake Plissken is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the complete opposite of every spy movie or every like guy who gets stuff done movie. You know, we're talking about Mission Impossible 3. We're talking about like the Bourne movies. Those are coming up in later on in our season of sequels.
Yeah,
those guys like just like come in, get out, don't get seen. Snake Plissken knows everybody, mm-hmm. runs into people, like makes friends, like. It just happens to like know the person who has like an underground network. Everyone knows Snake. Snake's like the cool guy.
He's a celebrity.
He's a celebrity gunslinger.
He totally knows the love interest from Big Top Pee Wee Big Shots or Big Shots.
Hot Shots. And yeah. Rain Man.
Oh, and Rain
Valeria
Man.
Galeno. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
she shows up and then pieces out way the fuck quick.
For somebody that was that high in the credits, yeah, that was a pretty quick exit, pretty sudden.
And then
same with Bruce Campbell.
Peter mm-hmm. Fonda was the dude that he went surfing with, who was the guy from Easy Rider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't notice that at first. I was like, who the fuck is that? And it wasn't until like he had the surfboard, and I was like, oh, shit, now I know who that is.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I think that's just a total play on that part in Easy Rider. It's like, hey, dude, you know, mm-hmm. just that burnout hippie, just looking for that big wave.
Yeah. The aftershock, man. The big wave's coming. This is the big one. And then he has to surf to catch up with Steve Buscemi's car. Mm-hmm. Or not Steve Buscemi's car, but yeah, whoever it is that was driving. Was it Steve Buscemi?
Yeah, it was Harry mapped the stars or whatever.
The other parallel I like to draw from this movie is to, the movie with Sylvester Stallone and,
not Tango and Cash.
No, gosh. I'm thinking of Steve Buscemi's character in this movie.
Hey, you know, sorry.
reminds me of, Sylvester Stallone character in Judge Dredd.
Oh yeah,
Rob Schneider.
Yeah. How he has like this like sniveling, like
kind of wormy,
kind of wormy. Not sidekick, but he's like a guy that he runs into along the way. And
like the mummy, the other like the,
exactly the
dude that's a little sleazeball.
Yeah. I love that just that you character love a type.
Good sleazeball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love a good sleazeball. And Steve Buscemi is great in this.
He's almost on the nose for like a sleazeball like that.
Oh, but he's also a like any endeavor like he. You know, hops into, he's really successful. Yeah. Except there at the end when he hops out of the plane. But like,
let me show you the stars.
Yeah, he's trying to like snatch up Snake, and he's like, "Fuck yeah, got him." Oh, I'm sorry, those are tranquilizer darts. Well, I guess I got exactly what I fucking wanted to.
Yeah,
gets like he's one of those sleazeballs that you're just like, man, he can't overcome our hero, but totally fucking does. And like at least. Twice or
he gets one over on Snake Plissken mm-hmm. and yeah. on whatever the main bad guy is.
Cuervo Jones. Not to be confused with Osmosis Jones or Basketball Jones.
Although he could be confused with Basketball Jones because he has an obsession with basketball executions, which honestly really surprising that no one has survived that before Snake Plissken. Oh,
mm-hmm. And they mentioned it's Disney World or Disneyland or something that they're in, right?
They go to Disneyland at the end. Mm-hmm. That's where they go to like launch off the big bad.
But they couldn't say it.
No, outright. they called it something else. It was like the world.
You're like, is that what I think it is?
Disneyland.
Yeah.
Blasney World.
I wrote in my notes that Snake Plissken is kind of a combination of Mad Max and Duke Nukem. I don't know if this sets the stage for Duke Nukem.
I think that's a great comparison. Yeah. Now, Snake Plissken was the basis for Solid Snake.
Ooh. That was my question.
Yes.
In Metal Gear Solid.
Yep.
So, okay.
Yeah. Eye patch, name Snake.
Talk more about that. Because
that is literally all I know about that. It's just that fact.
That is all I know as well. And I just thought it was one of those things that we found out in fifth grade, like when Marilyn Manson removed like 2 to 4 ribs so he could suck his own dick. I was like, that's before the internet. It must be true.
That was in fifth grade that you found that? What kind of fifth grade class were you hanging around?
Was Marilyn Manson around?
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't cool in third grade, Todd.
Conversation got a little graphic in fifth grade, I'm guessing.
Well, you know.
No, I really think if you go into this movie expecting something like serious and like, you know, actually taking itself seriously, you're going to be really disappointed because in the third act, they take like fucking parasails to get to him and then he has to like do a basketball challenge and they swap around discs and they do not take themselves seriously. And I think that's the main point.
Ain't no way a guy with an eye patch is making that many mid-court shots.
Yes. I'm just putting his depth perception cannot be that good.
I don't think he's going to hit the backboard.
Guy, all right.
Especially if he's running a temp.
You're showing exactly how little you know about Slade Wilson Deathstroke right now.
I'm stepping on Travis's beloved supervillain.
And Nick Fury.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So, Travis, what were your thoughts on this?
Well, hold on. Any other good, like, eye patch and, one-eyed heroes? Like, protagonists?
Cyclops?
Yeah.
Oh, well, both his eyes still work, but he's got those ruby red quartz lenses.
Did Yosemite Sam have both of his eyes? I don't remember.
I think he did.
So. Okay. Yeah. What kind of outlaw was that? He's got to have an eye patch.
Was he an outlaw? I thought he was just a prospector of sorts.
It could be.
I hadn't seen this movie either since since good old Blockbuster. But the thing was, when it came out, I had heard it was a sequel. And so I didn't want to watch it until I had seen Escape from New York. So I don't think I saw this exactly right when it came out. I think it was a while, and I checked out at Blockbuster both back to back. And so I didn't remember which was which. And it's been forever since I've seen them. I remembered Escape from LA more just because it had Steve Buscemi in it. Yeah. But I knew there was the big surfing scene, but other than that and Steve Buscemi, and that's all I could really remember. And I enjoyed it, but I didn't super love it. It was definitely more of a chore to get through this time around. But it did remind me a lot of, and God, we got to watch this on here, of like Demolition Man.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Where it was like it looked like it was written by like a fifth grader that was like, oh, this is going to be the coolest thing.
Yeah.
and oh, let's give him super poison darts and let's make him wear the cool black leather and the trench coat and
give him my coat back.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we talk real quick about his outfit being like thermally masking and like it blocks like temperature scans and.
Sure.
Why?
Does.
Why? And then he loses it in the cool. first act. Like he yeah. loses all that of his equipment. Part, like the first part of the movie. That,
yeah. The jacket and stuff. But I forgot. I totally want to mention this. Fucking Bruce Campbell is in this mm-hmm. as the surgeon. The part of the cult.
Surgeon general.
The surgeon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's right. The surgeon general. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, shit, who is that? Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I was all about that. And the extra, the other guest stars, Pam Grier, mm-hmm. Played a character. I can't remember the name, but it was non-gender specific, but I totally forgot. And they dubbed over her.
With a man's line. Voice. Yeah. Yeah. Very awkward, I thought.
Yeah. And then
Hershey.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, subtle.
Who else? Like, what other guest stars were in here? Like, the woman at the beginning, right when they put Snake into, right before they put him into the prison. I know she was, I think, a Bajoran alien in
Ro Laren in Star Trek. Michelle Forbes.
Okay.
And
in Star Trek: Next Generation. Yeah. And was she also in Deep Space or Voyager? One or the other.
She neither. She was in TNG.
Just. Okay.
And then she was in BSG, Battlestar Galactica. She was the admiral that.
Oh, yeah. And who was the guy that sent him in?
That was Stacy Keach. And I think of him in The Long Riders, like in the Western.
Yeah. He was so familiar, but I could not figure out where I knew him from.
That's the first thing I think of.
And then the president's daughter also looked very familiar, but she was. Not maybe Melrose Place or something. I recognized her in
My So-Called Life.
Four. Yeah. Oh, maybe, yeah.
The later seasons of Blossom, maybe.
I don't know.
She was in a couple of very special episodes.
Who else did we see any other weird guest stars that popped up?
None that I can think of. Those were the most famous ones. Mm-hmm. I can't believe they got Peter Fonda to be in this.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Very small role.
But one thing that I was thinking of watching this was the music reminded me a little bit of Firefly. I don't know about you guys, but some of John Carpenter's like guitar, country, twang stuff, it reminded me of Firefly.
Yeah, I can see that.
I've got to check that out again.
And I'm sure Joss Whedon was inspired by this a little bit to make like that kind of trashy space western, you know, where it's like kind of grungy and, you know, characters walk around like some guy playing a sly guitar.
I don't think I would have ever drawn parallels from Firefly to Escape from LA.
Yeah. There you go.
Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job.
I'm strong.
Also, so they...
I had to do some gymnastics to get there, but you got there.
Oh, yeah.
They full-on did the... here's my other thing. They, at the beginning, they're like, oh, yeah, everything... This is a hologram. Do you think would sit out here and let you clock us in the face? Right? No. And then they turn around, and as they're giving him weapons and guns and shit like that, they're picking them up and handing them to him. We're like,
the next scene.
Okay, that's, I mean, unless your holograms are dope as shit, like, you wouldn't need somebody if you had holograms that were like hard light that could pick up objects and turn around and wield guns. Fuck, you could just have 80 of those things drop them. Anyway.
Soldiers, yeah.
You don't need Snake Plissken anymore.
Exactly. Yeah,
honestly, that was only there as like a Chekhov's gun situation mm-hmm. for the end of the movie.
They just turn around and hand him shit. Like, here's this gun. Here's this poison thing. And here, what's this? Just matches. You're always going to need matches.
You never know when you need matches.
Yeah, and they always, I mean, I dig the whole James Bond Q thing. But the thing about that is it's always foreshadowing. You're like, hey, you don't know when you're going to need these cufflinks that also turn into suppositories, but you never know. And then all of a sudden, boom, Daniel Craig is like, got to kill somebody or like...
With a suppository. You know, that's an ugly way to die, especially with a cufflink.
Or he's...
How miserable would that be?
...taking some poison and he can only get out... Like, the suppository is the only thing that can save him. But I'm just saying, a cufflink suppository...
I do not want to watch the Bond movie that you write.
You know, enjoy dying anally from a poison where you could have gotten saved by a suppository.
I'm just thinking off the cuff. Boom.
Got him. So, closing thoughts on Escape from LA. I mean, worth watching again, or do you regret this?
Yes, I would watch it again. It had been quite a while, but like knowing what I was getting into, yeah, it is just a good time to watch if you're not looking for anything too serious, and if you're wanting super 90s. But other than that, I thought it was lovely.
I mean, I think there's a sweet spot in where a movie's enjoyable between, like, if it's so bad, it's not enjoyable. If it's, like, the mediocre good where it's not enjoyable. There's, like, a bad where it is enjoyable.
Yeah.
And this movie just hits that perfectly.
There's a Venn diagram in there somewhere.
This is, like, it's like a wave, like a sine wave. And I think this hits perfectly at the top.
Yeah.
I think this is my sweet spot for where I can enjoy a movie.
Yeah.
That's just, like, it's not objectively good. But it's stupid and fun, and I love it. I think it's the same reason I like Demolition Man, same reason I like, you know, Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
The original. And, well, not the remake. The remake's amazing for its own right.
Remake is dope as shit.
Dope Carl Urban as shit.
Is hardcore.
Yeah. But that was kind of a thing back then, like The Running Man and all those kind of goofy 80s and 90s movies. They were kind of stupid funny, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of just off the wall.
I didn't know if it was intentional back in the day. I don't know.
I kind of got the feeling Running Man was.
You can't write the beats in this movie without it being intentional.
Yeah. There was definitely some satire in this movie. There was definitely some social satire and political satire.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, because I read between the lines of that president, like he's kind of like this, supposed to be this televangelist slash like socially conservative, like hypocritical.
And he was a sniveling like coward at the end when, you know, everything was coming down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was like hiding and praying and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Not fit for the kind of Snake Plissken.
What was it like? Welcome to planet Earth. What a great closing line.
Great one-liners in this movie. Great one-liners.
Yeah. It was definitely a product of its time in that sense. That was where you could really get away with those.
Yeah.
Cheeseball one-liners.
Yep.
But
we talked about how Tombstone is sort of like the peak of Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was the peak of the one-liner era.
Yeah. But, yeah, because you had Die Hard with a Vengeance and that kind of stuff going on then, too. I mean,
Predator is also, like, up there with one-liners.
Die Hard
is up there with one-liners. I think this movie's in the running.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Die Hard might take the gold medal.
It's the golden era of one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
Die Hard is the gold standard.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
I mean, both hero and villain in that situation. They both were just completely adept. God
damn.
Yeah.
Alan Rickman?
Yeah.
You put him in anything, like, I'll fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, he could be reading the National Geographic. It's still going to sound as treacherous, mm-hmm. You know?
Yep.
Always.
Yeah. And now we go to the Mediterranean Ocean to examine the wildlife.
Clay.
Bill Clay.
We got to have Taylor here for that, you know? That's going to be our Halloween costume at some point, where it's like one of us is like Han or John McClane, the other one's like Bill Clay. You know,
mm-hmm.
What if we did three John McClanes and then Taylor was Bill Clay?
Mm-hmm. It's like, oh God, you're one of them. Oh, you're one of them.
Yeah. Just because I think the three of us would be like the worst John McClanes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would definitely be a good Carl Winslow though.
Oh, yellow dye number five.
I could definitely pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been another episode of Cinemavino.
Thanks, bitches, for joining us.
We'll post a link to Fabulous Merlot on the website. Definitely has a big old snake on the label. All of their wines are derived from Aesop's Fables.
This is a lovely wine. I enjoyed it.
Call me Snake. This one is the Grounded Sauvignon Blanc. We're all doing California wines tonight for Escape from L.A., so it seemed appropriate to do.
So, call me Plissken.
And so, yeah. And we will have links to that wine on the website. And be sure and tune in next time. We're going to do the next sequel pod. We're going to do a quick Suicide Squad examination and Mission Impossible 3.
MI3.
Yeah.
Not with a whimper, but with a bang. Nope. A bang, with a whimper.
Something like that. But Sean Jordan, Travis Budd.
Thanks for having us.
Woo!
I'm Todd Wofford, and we'll see you guys next time. To learn more about Cinemavino, check out our website at cinemavino.net. You can also listen, rate, subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you choose to listen to your podcasts. My movie reviews are available at toddwoffordmovies.com.